We sometimes think of these parishes that are doing really well as places that are somehow up in the clouds or something, but it's just very real, and there's problems, and there's difficult people, and slightly weird people, and beautiful people, and the sound that doesn't work on Sunday, and the projector that won't start up, and the choir that starts at the wrong time with the right hymn. You know, all of those things, and it just felt like, yeah, we can do this in Australia. We can do this.
Welcome to the Huntley Leadership Podcast, helping leaders be a positive catalyst to the people they support, the organizations they serve, and the communities they live. This podcast will make you think, laugh, and grit your teeth with new determination to make your parish or business a place of transformation, passion, and purpose. If you're still breathing, you are powered for impact. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Ron Huntley and I am your host today. Today's podcast is going to be about parish renewal, the journey of one lady's engagement and involvement in the church and the evolution of how that's impacted, I'm going to say, an entire country. And I know that you'd probably be embarrassed about that, Lorraine, but I'm going to say it anyway because I've witnessed it, I've seen it, I've been a part of it, and it's so fun. So you're really going to enjoy today's podcast. We're going to hear some really cool stories, and it's going to be very inspirational and a ton of fun. So Lorraine McCarthy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ron. It's so good to be here.
So some of you might have noticed that recently I made an announcement that we've just hired this wonderful woman to be a part of our team as the Diocesan Partnership Manager, and it actually is Lorraine. So you're going to get to know her through this podcast. And the very first question I always tell the guests before I ask it, just to start the conversation, and I already don't know the answer to this first question, so I'm going to learn a lot about Lorraine while we're doing this podcast as well. So it's going to be a ton of fun. Lorraine, how did you first discern a call to get involved with church?
Well, as I think about that, I look back to when I was a 16-year-old and I lived in a country parish in Victoria in Australia. My parents were dairy farmers and we had this little parish out in the middle of nowhere, really, in a farming community. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to get people together in a youth group? And and so we got this group of people together. We started off with maybe 10 or 15. It grew to be about 40 kids who met every couple of weeks, did a little bit of prayer, mostly just hanging around in the hall, having a lot of fun together. And I just remember being amazed at the work that God did, just drawing those people together. And then a couple of years later, in country Victoria, when you finish your schooling, secondary schooling, there's not really much to do in a farming community. So we all tend to move to the city. And when I moved there, I was a little bit lonely. I didn't really know very many people. And so I thought, let's get a group together. So we got a group together and we called it the Colbys. And that was before Maximilian Colby was a saint. And we had this beautiful group of young people who were all sons and daughters of farmers from around Victoria. And so we were all young people from the bush that came together in the big city and got to know each other. Half of the group married each other. And I guess that was something that's been a constant call in my life, is to get people together and to enjoy each other's company, but also to draw people into that relationship with Jesus. So the first parish that I really became involved in was a parish not long after I had my first baby, and we got involved there in a scripture group and drawing people in together. And then I got involved in RCIA, and we also started, there was something in Melbourne diocese, or really all around Australia, called Renew. I think you had that in other parts of the world, and I was called to lead that in our parish. And eventually I became as my children got a bit older, I started working as a pastoral associate in parishes, and I did that on and off for probably 12 or 15 years before I became involved with Alpha Australia. So
let me go back a couple of things here. First, we're going to get back, and I want you to tell people what a pastoral associate is. I have my definition, but I want yours. Mm-hmm. And so, because some people might not know what that means. But, you know, you said when you were 16, you felt like, wouldn't it be cool to get some youth together? And so we got a bunch of youth together. Who was the we?
It was a couple of other friends of mine. One was a fellow that was a couple of years older, kind of people that hung around it a little bit after Mass. You know how the parents all go off and talk, and so, you know, the kids just kind of hang and look awkward. And we there was about three or four of us that thought that this would be a really good idea.
Right on.
I just really love doing stuff in teens.
Right. And so there you go. Just so some peers. So did you guys get people together? Did you go to the pastor and say, hey, could we get some people together? Like, how did that work?
I'm pretty sure we would have had to go to the pastor, though I don't actually remember doing that.
Right.
And then he just said, go for it.
Have at her, which most priests would. Like, it's like, can you imagine some young people coming to you and saying, can we get some young people together? It's like, are you kidding me? Do you know how hard it is to get young people? Yes, you can do that. So what a blessing you guys must have been to him. And so this little town of dairy farmers, you were able to get like upwards of 40 young people together, be hanging out, doing some prayer and just growing in fellowship and falling in love and getting married. So that's
not so much in the youth group. We're a bit young for that.
Oh, right. That was the second group you started. Right. Okay. Good point.
But it was that really good. We went on, ice skating to Melbourne on a bus for the day. We played a lot of, games, in the scout hall that we'd hired and just basically hung out, which was just really fun. It's hard. Yeah. It doesn't take much to keep kids in the country entertained, really. The odd barbecue,
feed
the boys.
Of course, that was before internet and gaming, so people don't leave their house. So those were the good old days. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe these are the good old days. Yeah. But that's so cool. So what I hear, even coming to the city and not knowing people and getting people together, like you have a real gift for and a desire to gather people, like you said. I just think that's so cool. Like that's what a gift that is to the church. I grew up and there was never any youth groups when I grew up, and I remember moving to a town that had a vibrant youth group, and I was so excited. And the year I moved there, the leaders moved away. Just died. And I literally spent my whole life going to church, never around young people other than that awkward waiting for your parents to stop talking that you talked about. I should have started something. I wish I met you sooner. Although I was way too lost for that back then. So that's cool. So you mentioned at one point you started being a pastoral associate in a parish. And so I have my definition of a pastoral associate. For those that are listening that do not know what a pastoral associate is, how would you define that role?
In this diocese, a pastoral associate is an associate to the pastor, and it's meant to be not just helping Father out, but being an associate to the pastor in the leadership of the parish community.
Okay.
With the priests that you're working with, and sometimes there's a couple of pastoral associates, you look at the whole parish and you decide on pastoral direction together. And working in best practice, and I've certainly been very lucky to work for a couple of really amazing, thinking about what is it that the parish needs, what groups should we get started, what direction are we heading, how's the week gone, what is it that who needs to be visited this week, what's coming up.
Gotcha.
And a bit of longer term planning as well. So
that's beautiful.
An associate to the pastor in co-responsible leadership of the parish community at its best.
Yeah, and you'd be good at that, because you're really good. You're strategically, you're great at getting things done and very strategically minded and great at planning things and gathering people together.
That's so fun.
My definition of a pastoral associate basically would be doing everything the priest doesn't have time to do, which is a ton. Anybody that I know that have been an associate pastor, I remember a Christian one time was trying to get involved in Quebec when he was up there playing hockey. And he was working with his part-time pastoral associate who was responsible for children's ministry, youth ministry, confirmation, baptism, First Holy Communion, the religious education program, youth ministry. Like, it was just everything. It's like, oh my gosh, like, that's not even possible if you worked full time. Like, and so it ends up being a ton of responsibility, isn't it?
In fact, one of the jobs that I had for 4 and a bit years was actually leading a parish in the absence of a priest.
Wow.
So that there was a priest, but he lived and mostly worked somewhere else, and he just came in pretty much for sacraments. And that was really interesting. That helped me to see what it is to lead a community. And we took that little community from 50 people to about 150 over those 4 years. We just had one mass time, but we just grew running Alpha. We had to start RCIA. We had all kinds of things happening. It was amazing.
That's a whole other podcast all of a sudden. That gets me really excited. Not because we want to see churches without priests, but I mean, that's what used to happen when you know, I don't know, a couple hundred years ago, like, you know, priests would be sent as missionaries to create communities and then go and celebrate sacraments, but they didn't run the community per se, did they? Like, I think there were
seasons of that.
Well,
but he pretty much left me to it because he was somewhere else. So, yeah, that was
And I've heard of that in our diocese, too. There was I don't know, they had a particular name for him. His name was Greg, but that's not what they called him. But Greg had a title. And that was his role, and it was tough. Like, so that's so exciting. You were able to take a community from 50 to 150 in 4 years. Okay, I double dug anybody who's listening to tell me a story better than that one and call me, and I'll have you on the podcast next. Like, that is awesome. Like, wow, talk about gift of gathering people and creating community. So you did it when you were 16, and then you did it again so many years later when given this opportunity. Wow.
Mm. Yeah, it was amazing. And it really helped me a few years after that when it was only a few years, 4 or 5 years after that, maybe 3 years, when I met Father James and he was writing this book and we read, and then I read it, Divine Renovation, and he talked about you do everything that you know how to do and then you kind of reach a ceiling of not knowing what to do next. And that's where I got with that community. Like, we were growing. You know, there was a next step that I didn't know what to do. And and they often talk about that, don't they? That once things start, there's a new way of leading once you get the car out of the rut and it's not bogged anymore in the mud in Australia. Yeah, snow in Canada.
Snow in Canada, mud in Australia, exactly. Yeah, and I would often, like, sometimes people when they hear that I do parish leadership coaching, it's like, well, you know, they're shocked that somebody would stay longer than a year. And a lot of the people I coach, it's multiple years. Like, I've been coaching them years and years and years. And it's like, well, if you were a good coach, wouldn't they just not need you anymore? And it's like, well, I'm probably not that good of a coach, so maybe. However, what I've experienced and what I've seen people, we go through different seasons of leadership, and there's brand new problems. Like, the problems don't go away, they just change. You have better problems, but there's still problems. And so the shifting nature of leadership and the evolution of leadership, I just see it continuing to change as I journey with priests and bishops. And it's really exciting. I'm more than happy not to be a part of their journey anymore. But I just see that that's usually not the case. It's like this evolution of problems grows. They're good problems, but they're still problems, you know? It's like a lot of people want the growth, want the impact, want all these things. It's like, okay, awesome. There's problems that go with it, but as long as you're okay with the problems that go with it. And of course, yeah, they're better problems than the problems we want. But so that's neat for you to be able to have that impact in 4 years. That's spectacular.
But with a team of people.
Yeah, of course. Yes, no. I don't doubt that for a minute. So good for you guys. Yeah, I often find myself in new territory. Like, I spend most of my time over my head in terms of I don't know what to do And I guess my confidence is in, yeah, but I believe God does. And I believe in the people, to your point, on the team. And if we just keep being brutally honest with each other and discerning and prayerful and close to Christ, I just believe that's when we walk in faith in a way that's supernatural and scary and but fruitful. It's so fun, but it's scary because it goes beyond your capacity, which is where I spend most of my time. I don't know if it's because I've gone really far or just have no capacity, but either way, it's the same feeling, and it really is fun. So good for you. So, and then at one point you got involved with Alpha. So hold on. You talked about Father James's book just in terms of that concept, but at being a pastoral associate, I'm guessing you came across Alpha before you came across Father James's book, Divine Renovation.
Yes, I first came across Alpha back in 1998 or 9 when my little sister, I'm the oldest of 7 children and the fifth person in my family, Christine, my little sister, she'd been away from the church for a while and I hadn't seen her for a while either because I was in the middle of having babies and she was single. And she came and she'd been away from the church. So she drops around one day and she's talking about going to church, being part of music ministry, going to a Bible study. Like, what happened to you? And she said that her flatmate had invited her to go along to Alpha and that it completely changed her life. And I thought, I don't know what this is, but if we could do that for my little sister Christine, we need to do it in our parish. So where I was working in my own parish at the time, and it took me a little while to convince the parish priest that this might be something that we could look at because, you know, it's not Catholic. And this was 1999 by now, so it's
really
kind
cutting
of
edge.
Even less, no one had ever really heard of it. And finally, he said, yes, you can go ahead. So we got this really good, we did a pilot. We got this really good team together and we ran it for the first time. And the very first small group that I had, there was this couple called Rick and Jackie. And Jackie was the daughter of these Captain Catholics in our community, you know, and she was going out with what her parents called a heathen. You know, totally unbaptized, had no exposure to Christianity at all.
Oh,
and
wow.
They insisted that she bring Rick to Alpha.
Right.
And so the first night we're sitting in this circle during the small group time and Jackie is just so embarrassed because she's got to take her boyfriend, her cool boyfriend, to this daggy church thing. But she's rolling her eyes. She's got her arms crossed. She's got her shoulder up. But Rick loved it. He was just... he loved the food, he loved the videos, he loved the talking. He started coming early to help set up. And, you know, eventually he had a really strong experience of the Holy Spirit on the Alpha weekend, came on team next time, you know, the story that we talk about. And then eventually they got married and they have 5 children now and they live down on the Mornington Peninsula and they've been running Alpha in their community. And I suppose from that very first Alpha where we had that quite astounding faith conversion, really, it wasn't just about loving Jackie, it was about him, and he's often the driver in what happens in that family. It was about, they do it together, though, in a beautiful way, but they, from that very first time I saw the power of Alpha to transform lives. And so that was... And it was probably I started working for Alpha in 2014. So that was quite a few years later, but I've done it in every parish I've worked in as a pastoral associate. One of the first things got going was Alpha. Yeah. So
what a beautiful... Sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm done.
I say, what a beautiful story. It's just so funny, right? Because it would be so embarrassing to bring your cool boyfriend to some stuffy church thing, right? He's just a heathen, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek. And then she would probably feel like she has to try to be cool, and next thing you know, he likes it. It reminds me of a story of this lady at St. Benedict who had her life changed by Alpha, probably more so, or not more so, that was preceded by just showing up at Mass and slowly going from the back of the church to inside the church, and she was really hurting, single mom, kind of, you know, broken by life in many ways and just wasn't sure if she'd be accepted. And And lo and behold, she was, and she did Alpha, changed her life. She ended up being the MC for Alpha, giving a talk on Alpha, and she invited, she tricked, I don't know if it was her, I think it was her sister and her brother-in-law. She tricked them into coming out to Alpha. She invited them out for dinner. They didn't know where they were going, and then they show up at this church for this, of course, dinner that comes with Alpha, and they were so angry. Apparently, the first night, because they're both devout atheists, like probably evangelical atheists, and they were so mad at her, but she was the MC, so they couldn't say anything. They couldn't go tear her apart because it just wouldn't have been right. So they sat there, and then they start the conversation. So what brought you here? Guess the guy piped up. And he said, I got tricked here. My wife and I were atheists. Nothing against you guys. I'm sure you're fine, but we will not be coming back. I promise you that. And so they said, hey, that's okay. Glad you're here. And then they finished the night. And they left and they looked at each other and said, you know what, that actually wasn't so bad. I don't know, like, I'd go back if you'd go back. Like, what do you think? Well, I didn't mind it either. Those people were actually quite nice. I mean, I'd go back if you would go back, but I'm not interested in the... Anyway, they became Christians. Just like, who saw
it's amazing,
that coming?
Amazing, isn't it?
Amazing, yeah, yeah, just yeah. Like this Ricky guy, you know, this Rick guy. Like,
and,
I just
and
think,
Jackie, you know, they're just such a beautiful pair, and the way that they've grown in their faith together with Jesus is just lovely. Yeah,
and then
and
for you
family,
to have a tool
family.
For that, yeah, as, a, yeah, as somebody who's working in the church, because you can work in the church a long time and not see any Ricks come to faith, or
that's
not see any
yeah.
Jackies re-engage in the faith. In fact, a Jackie meets a Rick and you never see them again until they get married, and then maybe again when they have kids. But that now as a somebody working in the church, you had a tool to, you know, thanks be to Christine. That works for Christine, that worked for Christine, maybe to work for a Rick and a Jackie. And lo and behold, you have a tool as a church worker that actually makes new Christians. Like, what a revolutionary thought in our context. Because I grew up
it's
watching
good,
everybody leave, not seeing anybody come.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, good for you. So then years later, you started working for Alpha?
Yes.
How did that come about?
They were asking for a volunteer. I got the newsletter every month because I'd been leading Alphas, and I was in between jobs, and there was a request for a volunteer to help with something in the Catholic context. And I thought, well, I've got a bit of time at the moment. I'll
How
have a go at
How many kids did
that.
You have at the time?
Six.
So listen to this, everybody. She has six kids, and now she has a little bit of time at the moment. So anybody that has kids, I'm not taking no for an answer. It's not an excuse. Keep going, sorry.
Yes, so they met with me and asked me to come to a couple of things. I didn't realize that I was kind of being checked out, and then Melinda, who's the National Director of Alpha Australia, asked me to come to Adelaide with her for a day to meet the bishop there with her. So I did that. And then on the way home, she said, would you like a job? And I thought I was accepting a job to be the Alpha in a Catholic Context coordinator in our state.
Sure.
And I'd been there for about maybe 6 weeks or a bit longer when I realised, actually, they're talking about the whole of Australia here. Which was a little bit daunting.
When you said you were there for about 6 weeks before you realized, you mean you were in the job for 6 weeks before you... That's awesome.
That was called just bringing it, you know, helping me slowly to come to
Melinda
terms with what
is
it is.
She's a champion. That is awesome. That is so funny.
It is really good. And so we just... it was just the best job because I was... given the resources and the time and the ability to just travel around Australia and meet the most amazing people. And when I started, we had Alpha in about six Catholic parishes across Australia. And by the time we finished, it was kind of edging up around 300. And now we've got a new team that's much bigger and better than when I was there. And they are just really working in schools and dioceses and stuff all around Australia. It's just the most amazing organisation to work for. And just the I said to somebody one time when they were having a bit of a grizzle about the church, and it, as we do sometimes, we feel a little bit discouraged. Sure. And I said, you should be in my job, because when I look at the map of Australia, I notice where I know where the people are whose hearts are on fire, that are trying to bring Jesus to their community through Alpha. And I imagine these little flames of the Holy Spirit all the way around the map of Australia, you know, in Perth and in country Perth and in South Australia, in Adelaide and Port Pirie and up on the Riverina and all the way up the East Coast and Mount Isa, and all around there's people who love Jesus, who are desperate for their friends and family and fellow, you know, and their neighbours to meet Jesus, and they're doing something about it, and it's just beautiful. So I've got a lot of hope for the church, actually, because of these people that the Holy Spirit just sets on fire.
Yeah. Oh, it just makes me smile. Okay, so let's continue with the story, because I don't want to get ahead of myself. So the 6 churches to 300 churches during your time there. I just want to say this. You introduced me to Father Pier Luigi, and I recorded a podcast with him that by the time this one comes out, his will already be released. And it was just a joy to meet him. But, you know, he talks about the impact that you had in his life at a time where he was feeling stuck, and just how much... Yeah, it was just so cool to connect the dots here as we're having this conversation, as I'm hearing your story, and then even meeting some of the people whose lives you impacted, and I've met loads, you know, and so it's been a treat. So at what point during, so actually, I'm just putting this together now, 2014 is when you came to work for Alpha Australia with Melinda, and I think that's when Father James wrote his book.
Yes, I met Father James in London at the Alpha Conference in 2014.
Now, had he written the book yet?
He was in the process of writing it, and and it was coming out later that year, I think, or maybe the year after. I can't really remember, but it definitely hadn't come out.
Oh, that's so cool!
Yeah,
I didn't realize just how those things were igniting at the same time.
Yeah.
That is amazing. So tell me about that. Like, where did Divine Renovation, reading that book? So you'd already met Father James. Awesome, because isn't he a great guy? Like, he just, I could listen to him preach forever and just love being around him. He's a hilarious, like, brilliant man, very intelligent, but funny and great theologian. And so I'm sure it didn't take you long to pick up on all those things, eh? Like, just a passionate man renewal for the church. You know he's writing a book because you met him in London. So continue with the story.
So then the book comes out and it's amazing. And I thought, we need to get Father James to Australia to talk about this. So at the next leadership conference the next year,
yes,
I came armed. You know, Melinda said, you know, invited Ben, and we invited him. And he said yes. And so he came in 2016. So there was a bit of lag time for the first time in 2016, and travelled up and down the east coast of Australia, you know, in our 3 major cities. And people still talk about the impact of that visit.
Wow.
And after that, we got together a bit of a team from people that were working in different dioceses and people that had a passion for bringing Jesus to people and for renewal in the church. And we continued to grow that Divine Renovation movement in Australia, which was very, we took a team to Halifax in 2016 of 16 people, 45 in 2018.
You have a habit of growing things, 16 to 45 in 2018. I see a theme here. There's a lot of growth going on. There's fertile soil, 30, 60, 100 fold. He must have went to Australia before the Divine Renovation Conference, did he?
No, it was just after. Actually.
Oh, cool.
So we went to Halifax in June, and then... But we already knew that he was coming to Australia in November 2016.
Gotcha.
So we used that time in Halifax a little bit to prepare the soil a little bit, and we brought a couple of people very generously. Alpha brought a couple of people over there of influence who could meet and get involved and then go back and help grow, get ready for Father James's visit in the different dioceses.
So they would have seen him speak when he went. And so that would have been a great connection for them. You met him in London, then have him there, just again, grow that friendship. So that would have probably gotten them really excited, because you can't listen to him speak and not get excited. And so then you guys jump on a plane, just a small ride halfway across the world to Halifax. And I remember meeting you. I think you were the first person I met at the conference, like, because you came a few days early because your clock has to, so that you can think. And so I remember meeting, you were wearing a red dress. I still remember. We got pictures, you and me. Okay, this lady's from Australia. It's like, how cool is that? What was that like for you?
It was a little bit scary, actually, for a start, because I hadn't traveled a lot in those years. I'd been to London a couple of times. But I remember Melinda saying to me, she said, now, we need to really look after the people that we bring. So I want you to collect them from the airport, everybody that comes. Yeah. And you would know anybody from Halifax. The airport is a long way out of Halifax.
It really is.
And,
yeah.
And flights from Australia always seem to arrive at 1 or 2 a.m. And so I thought, I'll have to drive a car. I'd never driven a car on the other side of the road before.
You guys drive on the other side of the road. You guys are on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, so she said, how hard could it be? Well, at 1 o'clock in the morning when you've just been on a plane for 28 hours or something, it's pretty hard. So there was a lot of, I had to overcome a lot of fear that first trip. And then to front up at the parish and just say, hi, I'm Lorraine from Australia. I've arrived for the conference 3 or 4 days early, but it was, I couldn't get over the welcome and how amazing everybody that I spoke to in the parish. And it just helped me to see the context of, you know, what the book came out of and what a renewed parish looks like, which was just tremendously exciting. And also achievable, because we sometimes think of these parishes that are doing really well as places that are somehow up in the clouds or something, but it's just very real, and there's problems and there's difficult people and slightly weird people and beautiful people and the sound that doesn't work on Sunday and the projector that won't start up and the choir that starts at the wrong time with the right hymn, you know, all of those things. And it just felt like, yeah, we can do this in Australia. We can do this. So in that way, it was scary, but it was tremendously exciting.
It's so fun. I just assumed, because again, I remember meeting you. We'd never put on a conference before. We were just trying to do it to stop the inflow of calls that were coming in because of the book. We thought nobody will come to the conference, but at least we can say, oh, we'd love to answer your question. Why don't you come to the conference? We don't have time to talk right now because we're being overwhelmed by phone calls. But we didn't know anybody would come. And so I just thought it was so fascinating. We were all overwhelmed with joy, like just absolute joy. We prepared as if people were coming, but we didn't know if anybody could come. And so it was a treat, but I remember them doing a trailer video and just little vignettes with catching people at different parts. And my favorite line was the one you just said. And it was this young girl just said, you know, what's your takeaway from the conference? This, if we can do this. And you could tell in her eyes and the way she said it, she meant it. And, I think Father James said something like, you know, hey, welcome to Halifax. As you can see, we're not all 7 feet tall. And, you know, because, you know, people seem bigger than life on TV or in books. And when you hear things and then you come and it's like, yeah, we're just as normal as everybody else. And if they can do it, we can do it. It's like, I know, that's the good news. Oh, good for you. That's fun. So who are some of the names? Do you remember some of the names that came? All our listeners are going to go, why are you asking?
Well,
I don't know any of them. But
there was Father Mike from Tasmania.
Oh,
and we've got this. And one
he's
night,
still listening now. I guarantee you.
I bet he does. And one night, and he won't mind me telling this story, but one night it started to rain just as the conference was finishing, and you did have buses to take people back to the accommodation, but there was a bit of a queue.
Yes.
And so a lot of us, more than legally, so I'm not going to say how many there were, squeezed into this little van that I had. And I looked around and Father Mike wasn't outside and he didn't seem to be in the car. And I said, "Where's Father Mike?" And I hear this thing in the boot. He'd climbed into the back. Very illegal. So, yeah,
it's only illegal if you live in Nova Scotia. If you're from Australia, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, Daniel Eng was another one that was there, and he's just doing amazing work in Sydney at the parish renewal. Greg Shikovskoy from the Emmanuel community, and Pat Keady, and those beautiful people.
Pat was there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I just can't think of others.
No, that's okay. That's just
wonderful. There was a couple of priests from Sydney Diocese.
There
was
wonderful.
A James McCarthy, and I'm married to a James McCarthy, so there was a little bit of a joke in our family that I was going to Halifax with Father James, with James McCarthy, but not my James McCarthy.
They're interchangeable. Like, as long as you have one, you're good.
Yeah.
That's not true, Jim. That's not true. I take that back. Wow, that's fascinating. And so, you grab a group. The book comes out. You grab a group of people. You read the book. You fly to Halifax. You experience something that's like, hey, wait a minute. This is within our reach. You go home. You get ready for Father James. Father James comes and lights up Australia, I'm sure. In terms of his passion for parish renewal, right?
Yeah.
And then you have this group of people that all of a sudden it's like, guys, let's keep talking about this. And it was just such a hand in glove fit with your Alpha job, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And Alpha Australia was so generous in allowing me to really work with that too. Just ignite that flame, that little pilot light, you know, how Alpha talks about pilot light Christians and whoosh Christians. And
yes.
Yeah, just seeing that come alive.
Wow.
Just a couple of weeks ago, the first big, you know, Divine Renovation Conference in Australia, and 450 people with a waiting list. I think it maybe was 490. They could have put another, if they had, they could have fitted another 200 if they could have fitted them in, would have come. It's just huge in Australia now, which is just such a blessing for our church.
Well, and I think when you and I were talking a little bit about that, because I know you made it up to participate and volunteer and help out, and you were just saying that how well it was done, how Father Chris and his team opened up their church, but it was so great because, you know, it's not like they've got this mega church with endless resources. Like, no, they're a church like everybody else with, like you say, all their issues and problems. And it just makes it so relatable and possible.
Yes, so true. Father Chris is just amazing, Father Chris Ryan, but he doesn't have anything special in his church. He's needing, you know, a bit small and a bit old. He doesn't really have a hall that he can do things with. So Alpha presents a real problem.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, they're getting big alphas, but how do they do it? They don't have a suitable kitchen, but they're doing it. They're just, people
Finding
love Jesus
ways.
And they just want to spread the word, you know?
Well, that's so fun. I did a podcast with a friend of mine named Mitch from Northern Ireland, and he's totally set me up. He talked about churches that are under-resourced, and I'm like, yeah, it's really hard to be under-resourced. And he totally set me up because it's like, yeah, if you've got Jesus in the Bible, you're not under-resourced, you're over-resourced. And I just thought, oh, you got me. But, you know, because we can feel sorry for ourselves, right? We say, oh, yeah, we'd do that. We'd be able to do that if. Yeah, if we had that, we'd be able to do it too. We make all these lists of excuses to excuse ourselves from not being fruitful in the form of transformed lives. And it's like, that's tragedy, because when we stop passing the buck and we take ownership as leaders and we start leaning in, God wants to help us win. Like, we have everything we need in the Catholic Church. We have the sacraments. We have the Holy Spirit. Like, you know, it's like, man, you know, if the 16-year-old girl can go from 4 people to 40 people with a youth group with a bunch of dairy farmers and you know, anything's possible. And so, yeah, great. That's just such a great story. What are some of the other stories? I'd just love to maybe pick one, maybe two of your favorite stories during your time with Alpha in terms of priests and parishes that, and you know, I love that Rick and Jackie story. Like, do you have one of a priest who just really, I don't know, benefited from beginning to use a tool that helped him bring people home and what that did to him?
I suppose I could talk about Father Mauro and Vanessa. A lot of hear about them, don't they? But
Probably
not. Yeah, in Australia they're a little bit better known. But Father Mauro came to the very first session when Father James came in 2016. Man. And we had a day where the Diocese of Brisbane had invited in some key leaders who they thought might be interested. And Father Mauro came with a few people from his parish, and it was a new parish. It was the newest parish in Brisbane. It had only been there for maybe 4 or 5 years. He didn't have a church yet, though they did have plans to start building one, and he had no parish staff at all. You know, the parish secretary was a volunteer. Everybody was a volunteer. And so he gave the Divine Renovation book to a dozen or so people and asked them to read it, and then invited them to come on this day, and about 8 of them came. And at the end of the day, they formed a leadership team, a bit of a team that mm-hmm. they thought they'd pilot Alpha. So it was only maybe 6 weeks later that they invited me to come to their parish, and we ran a bit of an Alpha training, and we got their pilot going. And I remember they invited me to come and help them with their first weekend because they really wanted to get it well. And they actually had it wasn't just an Alpha weekend day. It was an overnight one. And on Saturday night, the Holy Spirit came in a really powerful way on the Saturday evening, and everybody was really excited. And we were starting this fire. We had this fire and it was a bit wet, so we were under a bit of a veranda. And after a little while, we kind of looked up and we realized that the fire wasn't doing much good for the veranda. And we were laughing. But just the camaraderie and the beauty and the humility of Father Mauro as he formed that team. And I think he was one of he came to the next DR conference, I think, and was one of the first people in Australia probably to be coached, even around the world.
Yes, I remember that.
And what's happened with their parish. But it wasn't easy because they had no resources. They had nothing. Everybody was volunteers. And the way that their Alpha grew and how humble they were and open to listening and hearing advice, though they only had enough people in their first Alpha after they did their pilot, they only had enough team to have about 40 guests. So they had a team of about 10 people. So they said, well, they can fit 40 guests at a pinch, but they had 60 that wanted to do it. And so rather than just stretching and going beyond what they could do, they felt as though, okay, we'll put 20 on a waiting list. Well, we'll do it with 40.
It's hard to do that, isn't it? It's hard to have the discipline to do
that. It is very hard to say no to people. Yep. And I think they're a little bit selective of that waiting list, but then next time they were able to take 60 that they needed, you know, they had 80 that wanted to do it. So I think the way that Father Mauro was able to talk from the front and lead from the front and be actively involved and really just engage his community, and they're still going all these years later. Their parish is growing, lots of problems, lots of issues. Father Mauro's now been called to another community and, you know, can he do it all over again? But that was just a beautiful story of just really starting from the start, slowly, slowly finding out problems. And you'd know their story a little bit too, Ron, because you coached them for a while.
They're just such beautiful people. And then, you know, as Divine Renovation continued to grow, I remember Father Tiago was just grilling me because he wanted to be coached from Portugal. I'm thinking, we don't have time. Like, they're booked up nonstop, full to the gunnels. But Vanessa is Portuguese, and And it's like, wait a minute, you connect the dots and coach them for a number of years. Vanessa, would you ever consider coaching? Well, if, you know, maybe. And so invite her into, onto the coaching team and support her, and then connect her with Father Tiago. And Father Tiago is, I think he's got like 28 churches in Portugal now doing parish renewal. And I'm telling you, it was as dead could be over there in terms of nobody participating, nobody open, like no, like it just... I remember him describing it to me, and I'm just getting a headache listening to him. It's like he's got like five parishes, and they're all tiny, and, you know, nobody wants to change. It's like, and it's radically changed, so much so that Portugal's on fire because of him. But that comes back to Father Mauro and his humility and his willingness to lead and listen and gather people around and learn to lead out of a team. Didn't even have a church building, built a church, and just kept bringing people to faith like crazy. Vanessa's an optometrist, you know, leaves her practice to work for the church full-time as an evangelist. Like, who does that? But when the vision's so crazy, so exciting, so life-changing, it's hard not to get involved when the Holy Spirit has your heart. So yeah, just watching them impact their area, but way more than that, like, just set a whole country on fire. And I know that they've been leaned on to help with a continued movement of Divine Renovation Australia. So what a great story.
Mm-hmm.
What a great story. And you guys have to tune back in, listen to Father Pierluigi. That's the coolest story too. And so I'm going to add him to
Isn't
that
Isn't it beautiful?
Too. It is beautiful. It is beautiful. And you know, one of the things too, I just want to mention this. I remember when I was there, you asked if we could go to Adelaide. And it was, there was a priest there who was, God bless him, he'd wrestled with cancer a couple of times and was actually wrestling with it again. And just out of sheer generosity of Alpha and you, we went there to be with him. And he was just a gem of a human being. And I remember meeting with him and his leadership team and the tears and the pain that they were experiencing, but also the joy. It was just this mix of things. And I remember leaving with a heavy heart, just because it was so beautiful. It was just such a ministry opportunity for me. And of course, he passed after. That was the last time I saw him. And me, you know, and just think the love that Alpha puts out there and through you and your generosity in inviting me to go there. I just felt like it was, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Father John was beautiful.
Yeah, it really was. And so then at one point, I know that you were working with the Diocese of Melbourne. You did a lot of great work with them, with Archbishop Peter, just this crazy, cool, exciting plan for renewal, and a part of that team as they launched and got that up and running, which was wonderful. You led a team there with that really came alongside of priests and helped them bring their churches to life, which again is never easy. It's a long journey, but just so fun with your time there. And what are some of the learnings that you bring from that experience that you're really thankful for when you think about it?
The beauty of the team and the importance of prayer. You know, I think our team there would say that we started every day on Zoom, or if we're in person, we always start the day with prayer, and that animated every other thing that we did. And sometimes you kind of think, oh, we don't really have enough time to be spending all this time praying, but I think it's really the most important thing that we did. I think some of the exciting things there too was to watch as Archbishop Peter talks about his plan, who creates this vision for renewal, and that we don't have to be a church that's experiencing decline, that we can be a hopeful church that goes out there. To see lights start to come on in the eyes of some of our clergy and gradually kind of buy into this hope for the future.
Wow.
And parishes that would say, priests that would say that there's nobody that would lead this. But then when they start to look at their community with these eyes of hope and think about who we have there and ask some people, that they surprisingly, for them, they're really surprised that they find that there are people out there that have the fire of the Holy Spirit in their hearts that are called to this. And it's just a matter of asking. And that was the most exciting thing sometimes, you know, after sitting in a presbytery, listening to a priest saying, I'd love to do this, but I have nobody.
Yeah.
And then to work through them with who could you ask, and people saying yes, and things starting to come alive. It's just beautiful, because I think God really does give us the people that we need to do what he wants us to do. Because why would God put a call on your heart if he doesn't give you what you need? And so I think trusting in that and thinking, if I think that I haven't got anyone, well, then maybe I need to have another look, because there are people there. Yeah, that was really a big learning.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, I think as priests too, they just see doing church as their job. And so they don't see people. They don't have, a lot of times they have no idea how hungry lay people are to make a difference and collaborate. They're just so excited, but they never get the chance. And when they do get the chance, it changes their life too. And so it really is a wonderful opportunity for people to grow together while making a difference. And so it really, it's been fun to watch that go down, to watch people grow in hope and impact. And you and your team were just so fun to work with and watch that continue to grow. Again, I just mesmerized, because I've worked with a number of dioceses over the years, and I'd never seen a better plan in terms of understanding of what we're dealing with, and then opportunities like how to execute that, recognizing the differences that people might have as leaders in terms of where they, how open they might be to go on that journey with you guys. And so you didn't treat everybody the same. You just recognized, no, we need to go at the pace that people, that these church leaders are willing to go at. And I loved the respect for that, the clarity of that, and then the alignment for action and support that you guys had. It just, I learned a ton working with you and your team as you put that together with Archbishop Peter and his team. Like, I just thought, way to go. Of all the dioceses that I've worked with, I've never seen a better plan, not only thought through, but then executed than what you guys were doing there. So that was a ton of fun. And so now we get to work together even more. I tell our listeners that Lorraine invited me years ago to come down to Australia after Father James went there, the ultimate theological disruptor, Father James from Allen. And then I came in, you invited me to come and be with you, and we traveled like just, we were road warriors for those, I don't know, 3 weeks. I don't know how long I was there. Felt like it took me 3 weeks to get there on the plane. It was so long. But it was so fun to work with you. What I recognized, I'd never worked with anybody who understood how to leverage influence so well. Like, you made sure that you put me in front of people who you thought that would have the biggest impact on. And so just minute after minute, we were just in front of different people, whether it was speaking, coaching, you name it. And I had so much fun working with you through your, you planned every minute of every day out, and it was so much fun as we went up and down the coast of Australia and met all kinds of just amazing people. And then we did it all again like 9 months later, didn't we?
Yeah, it was pretty close, wasn't it, those two trips?
Yeah. That I swore I'd never go to Australia again. It took me so long to get there. No, I said, I won't go again for 5 years. It took me so long. I wasn't used to traveling that long. And then, of course, 9 months later, I'm back on the plane heading back over to do it all again. It was just so much fun. But really, I've always enjoyed working with you while you were with Alpha, while you were with a diocese, and I'm just so honored to work together now in your role of diocesan partnership manager. You just have so much experience. So for those of you that are listening, if you work in a diocese, you are going to hear from Lorraine at some point in the next year or so. You're going to love picking her brain and learning from her experience as she learns
Thank
about
you,
your
Rob.
Diocese. Yeah, we're going to have fun together,
Thank
aren't
you.
We?
Oh, I think we are. I think we are.
That's wonderful. Well, listen, it's been a treat having you on the show today, and I have learned a bunch about you that I find even just that much more fun Tori, I didn't know you have more than one gym in your life. Yeah, that's good to know too. You know, it's good. If the one you're with and the spare one, just in case. So that's all. No, just teasing you. I look forward to being. We're going to be, for those of you that are listening, we're going to be, and sometimes maybe you travel to the conference, the Alpha Conference in May. Lorraine and I and the real Jim are going to be going to London this May, and I hope that we can connect and see you and get to say hi. Please leave a comment, leave a question on the comments in terms of YouTube or Facebook or what have you, wherever we're at. We're all over the place, and we would love to connect with you. Again, Lorraine, thank you for sharing your story. It's such a story of growth, impact, growing responsibility and impact in the church, and you're just a really inspiring disciple, and I'm glad to work with you.
Thank you. Thanks, Ron. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to encourage you, as you lead this week, be faithful to God and generous to others. See you next time, and remember, if you're still breathing, you are powered for impact.